do me a favor, Nachum, you close the door. Ready? It's rolling? Okay, great. Today is Sunday, February 19th, 2012 already. Boy, the years are flying, the months are flying, the days are flying, and I start to feel the pain that I feel every year. When I was a high school rabbi in the MTA, you couldn't wait for the year to end to get rid of the brats and hope that the next year is a better year. But when I started teaching on a collegiate level, it all changed. And I don't have to tell you on this level, it hurts because some of you are so close with, and you have to go out into the big world, and I will miss you. I will miss you. It's not so simple for a rabbi. I've had some wonderful students over the years in the Kollel, and it's not so simple. Anyway, I say good afternoon to all of you sitting in front of me. The rain has stopped. We've had endless rain since Friday afternoon through midday today. And thank God the Kinneret has risen. Pardon the pun. And I want to say hello to all those listening, and I acknowledge all the emails. I can't answer them all personally. There are just too many coming in, but I will relate to some in today's share, particularly tomorrow's share, where I really caused a lot of interesting reaction. Now, today's share is very fascinating. We continue. What are the makorot that we turn to when we have to paskin, when we have to learn, when we have to reach conclusions? We're going to be rabbanim, and so many questions will come our way in the course of a lifetime. And I have to tell you, as young as I am, I still think, you know, I used to say, I've seen it all, I've heard it all. I can tell you it's not so. That even in the last few weeks, I've seen things I never saw before, got questions I never got before. And this is life. Now, we spoke last week in great detail about Rav Avadya Yosef. And again, Rav Avadya begins, and perhaps rightfully so, where he puts the needle into the Litvisha Welt, that they lost the ability to paskin, and it's only today the Sfadim, with their great Bekiyot, they're the ones can come paskin. Of course, I have to tell you that all this is a bit of an echo of the Gemara at the end of Brachot, Sinai ve'oker harim mi adif. And I've spoken about it many times, and, you know, there's no black and white answer. Some of us, when we sat in front of the Rav, were impressed with his innovativeness. What you call a mahalach, Rav Aaron Soloveitchik once said to me that the greatness of my brother was that no matter what he touched, he was innovative. And it's true about the Rav. Rav Aaron said to me, no matter what he touched, dashanut, philosophy, agada, and of course, halacha, he was always innovative. Rav Aaron Lichtenstein, I remember we were blown away by his bekiyot. You know, he could sit there in front of the Rav, and he was the Rav's what you would call computer. In those days, we didn't know what a computer was. A computer may have existed, but maybe there was one in the CIA in Washington, D.C., and it took up a full room. But he was a walking computer, and this is an interesting question. What's fascinating is that my dear student, Rabbi Yosef Chaim, showed me a volume he has called Igeret Leben Torah by Rabbi Yitzchak Yosef. And in back of it, he tells a few stories about his father. So I'm quoting to you from page 213, that when Rav Avadya returned from Cairo, you know, he was Av Beit in Cairo, and then the war broke out, Mohammed HaShikrua, and he had to get out to save his life. So he was worried that if he won't continue learning, they'll draft him into the army. I have to tell you, as one who, Baruch Hashem, has served in the army, and today I serve through my children, my grandchildren, etc., it's nothing to worry about. But I guess at that time, the army was a frightening experience for someone who's all his life been a yeshiva. So he went into Reb Tzvi Pasek Frank's Kollel. And in this Kollel, the Gedolei Hador learned there, Reb Shmuel Rezovsky, who later becomes Rosh Yeshiva in Panovich, Rav Sholem Shvadrin, the Magid Yerushalmi, he used to come to this building once a year and give the BMT boys chizik and a speech. Fabulous individual. And Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbach and others. And when they got involved in an argument in a certain sugya, they would say one to the other, I quote, Namtin ad sheyegia chacham Ovadia v'nishal mai daito b'inyan. And when Rav Ovadia would come in, they would ask him the question, and he would spit out endless makarat. So it shows you that the great minds, the literature, future Rashi Yeshiva, knew that as far as Sinai goes, it was Rav Ovadia who had all the bekiyat. Interestingly, I got an email from my student of Yeshua Grunstein. He heads up a program of Rav Riskin for young rabbis who want to be prepared and go chutz l'aretz. I think you have to go for 5 years, but they place you and they take care of you, they guide you. It's a fabulous program because it comes up with rabbis all over Europe, forsaken places. When I look at Joseph Chaim, see, when I look at his brother, I can speak Yiddish, but when I look at him, I have to remind myself to speak English. And for all types of forsaken places, so he sent me La Briyot. Very fascinating that in the first volume of the Chelkat Yaakov, of Rabbi Yaakov Breisch, this was a Hungarian posek who winds up, saves his life and winds up in Switzerland. And when he first came out, he asked for haskamas, and he asked for haskama from Rabbi Zalman Meltzer, who was then the leading Rosh Yeshiva in Eretz Yisrael. And Rabbi Zalman writes to him, and he publishes, you know, I'll comment in a second, but he writes to him, it's more than 30 years that I left Slutsk, and I'm no longer a shtat rav, I'm just involved in giving shayurim, and I saw that your sefer is filled with shalit and shibat halacha lemaisa, and he says, how can I give haskama? I'm not involved in this type of learning anymore, I'm more involved in the yeshiva learning, and it's a very fascinating letter. And of course, Rav Breisch publishes it. So you'll say, why does he publish it? It's not a haskama. But you see, if an Adam Gadol writes you a letter, that itself is a haskama. It shows his machshev you. And there, I take you back. I told you, years ago, they were working on tapes of the Rav that survived from Sanhedrin, from the famous Sanhedrin Shirim, that the Rav began. Because if you read Washington, you have the whole story there. But here I am, sitting in Shia, and they come up, the Rav shouts at me, what are you, are you from Rabbi? And the Rav puts me down, and I played it for the class. So the class, you know, the attitude here in the caller was, you know, you're young kids yet, you still have an ego, and you get offended. Rebbe, the Rav puts you down, what are you, a masochist? I say, you guys don't start to understand. That's the greatest compliment in the world, that the Rav called me a Reformed Rabbi. It shows who mitjaches elai. And the truth is, I was, when I hear the tape of so many years later, this happened in 57, 58, when I hear the tape, I'm not upset at the Rav. I'm not upset with myself. I'm upset with my classmates who had such a hearty laugh at my expense. And Rebbeinu Shel Olam, come to your colleague's defense, speak up for me, defend me. No, they had a good laugh. The Rav called me a Reformed Rabbi, and the Rav is laughing, and they're laughing, and poor Ronnie Roscoff is put down. But today, it shows you who mitjaches elecha. And I'll show you a classic example of this, Be'ezrat Hashem, in a few more years, where we'll deal with Kedushin al Tnai, and a sefer comes out in Brooklyn, and this rabbi, it's the 1920s, he publishes a letter from Rav Kook, you know, like it's a haskama, and in the letter, Rav Kook calls him every name in the world and tells him he's totally wrong, no one can agree with this, it can't be, it's too innovative, but he publishes it because Rav Kook wrote him a letter, whom mitjaches elav, and this is the spirit which you have to take in, and it's a very interesting letter from Rabbi Zalman to Rabbi Yaakov Breisch. Okay, And then we saw, we went into a long account of what Rabbi Vadya's son, Rabbi Yitzchak Yosef, and how he defends his father. And I gave you the background of Ben Ishkai, Rabbi Vadya viewed as a revolutionary. And there are very sharp words said against Rabbi Vadya. I don't want to quote them because it's on tape. It'll go all over the world and it goes out of context. Yitzchak, relax yourself. Relax. I'm going to give you a source now that will blow your mind. And he defends his father and he says, look, everyone has a right in the world to differ, but you have to do it with respect. And here, I want to tell you that the little Shemesh came up with a source that is fabulous. It's just a hard source to find. Where is the source exactly? I'll give it to you. And it's a hard source to find because it's an addendum. It's not part of the actual tshuva. But here it is. It's Sefer Yabia Omer. One second. Sefer Yabia Omer, Chelik Vav. And it's the addendum on Orachayim Simen Mem Ches. And you'll find it on page, this will make it a little bit easier, Shin Nun Zayin and Shin Nun Chet. At the bottom of Shin Nun Zayin, it continues on Shin Nun Chet. And Rav Avadji is dealing there with a whole machloket he has with Rav Moshe Feinstein. It deals with Suffolk Bracha. It's not important now. But what is important is Rav Avadji says, and even if we disagree, but it has to be done with great respect. And he says, a sefer just appeared the Manali Geret, and I saw in there that he also differs with Reb Moshe, with the Igrot Moshe on this point. But the way he differs, ubechol sifro matir tvarim kashim umarim klapav v'chein lo ya'aseh. And this is exactly the approach that one has to take. You can't go and throw acid at Gedolei Yisrael. You have every right to differ, but it has to be becovered, it has to be with respect, it has to know, you have to know what you're doing. And it's fascinating to see that Rav Avadji Yosef, the height of Sfatic tradition in our generation, goes to the defense of Reb Moshe Feinstein, the height of Litvisha Psak tradition in our generation. And this is Mamish Avat HaTorah. This is Mamish Talmidei Chachamim. Our minds work differently. We may not agree on everything, but it has to be with respect. Okay, now I want to go to the full. We spoke about Psakim. We spoke about Sifrei Psakim, we spoke about Rishonim, we spoke about Shuvat, but there's one tremendous additional source that has become so paramount in our lives that you today take it for granted. I can tell you when I was growing up, this didn't exist. And today, it's part and parcel of the Torah world, Torah education. It is a bracha, and it is also a klala, a curse, as I will show you. Now, what am I talking about? And here's a word that Rav Shlomo Yosef Zevin made up. Mesadrim. People that want to find a seder. And in other words, you want to publish Divrei Torah, you want to publish Torah concepts, but you want to do it in an organized form. Somehow, when something is organized, it's a lot easier to find. And let me give you a basic example. Whoever came up with the concept of counting mitzvah, tayak mitzvah? Okay, it's a famous Gemara, Rav Simlai, that they're tayak mitzvah, but to put it into an order. And here we have two fabulous examples of Sefer Mitzvot. First of all, you have the Smag, Sefer Mitzvot Gadol, Reb Moshe Mikutsi. He's known as Reb Moshe Kusi. In English, you'll see his name spelled C-O-U-C-Y. The truth is, that was not a last name. He came from the city of Kusi. He's known as Reb Moshe Mikutsi. He's one of the early Gedolim of the Ashkenazic world. And the smug, you all hear the smug, everyone quotes the smug, Sefer Mitzvot Gadol. Now, all the mitzvot are organized. Tayag, one after another. What's the Sefer Mitzvot that you refer to all the time, and when you stam say Sefer HaMitzvot, who do you mean? The Rambam, Sefer HaMitzvot of Reb Moshe ben Maimon. But there's one tremendous difference here. The smug is not just listing out the mitzvot. Every mitzvah he lists out, he gives you tens and tens of paragraphs of details. In other words, he used a catch concept, a catch word. You look at the mitzvah. I'll give you an example in a second. The minute you look at the mitzvah, all that you have to know, all of Shas relating to this mitzvah, directly or indirectly, is right there in the smug. Unlike the Sefer Mitzvot of the Rambam, which you're all familiar with, gives the mitzvah, gives you sources, gives you a minimum of detail. It is more a compendium, making it easy for you to find the Tayag Mitzvot. Why doesn't he give you a lot of information? Because when you want the information, you go to the Mishneh Torah. And you know the way the Rambam wrote the Mishneh Torah. Every section is introduced. These are the mitzvot that are discussed in this section. Mitzvot Aseh and Mitzvot Lo Tahaseh. And all the details that you are lacking open up the Sefer HaMitzvot of the Rambam and you will find them all. Now, the smug, I'll give you a simple example. Take Mitzvah Chaf Zayin. It's Birchat HaMazon. Mitzvot Aseh min HaTorah Levareich al Achilat Lechem. Shenema. Eretz asher lo miskanot tochal balechem v'achalta v'savata uveirachta. And immediately he begins with, look how many pages, two columns, rabbinic Hebrew. This is page Nun. He ends, doesn't end off. He ends off about Birchat HaMazon in page Nun, Dalid, the second column. And then goes on to talk about other brachot. And every halacha you can imagine is here. What is bread? What do you bench on? What are the five minim? How does it relate to Hilchot Pesach? What can become chametz? That is bread. Everything is here. All the halachot. Keviat Sudah. The brachot. What's the oraita? What's the rabbanon? This is the smug. In the Rambam, fine, a mitzvah to say the writer takes up maybe one half of one column, and that's the difference. But these type of svarim, it's a sidur, it's organized, it's a little easier to find. It's tayag mitzvot, mitzvah to say, mitzvah lo tasei, one, two, three, four. Sefer HaChinuch goes according to the Parshat. It also somewhat falls into the category, but the Sefer HaChinuch is much more like the smug than like the Rambam. Okay. Then there's another concept. And I think this other concept, to a certain degree, was influenced, and I think I'm right, it's a guess, by the development in the general world, the universal world, the enlightened world. Because originally, knowledge was totally in the hands of the church. Anyone who was a lay person was totally ignorant. It was only the priests who knew how to read and to write. There was no universal education. we Jews, Kanaim Hara, had universal education from the time of Rabbi Yoshua ben Gamla. You know what the Gemara says, Zachur Otoish Latov. And from time immemorial, V'limadatem et Menechem V'dibatem Bam, when I dabble with my grandchildren, I always give them a little push when it says, V'dibatem Bam, V'shiftecho, V'veitecho, V'lechtecho, V'aderech, etc. V'limadatem et Menechem, you got to get children, your future. But then, with the Enlightenment, gradually, the world took on knowledge. And people wanted knowledge. And knowledge had to become accessible. And a little system began, which we use every moment of our daily life. Alphabet. How do we find it? My wife, we just had an Hebrew word, I don't know, we saw it in the newspapers. Ophir. My wife says, how do you spell it? I say, with an aleph. What does it mean? I say, to my knowledge, it means gold. Looks into the dictionary, it's not there. We spoke with our daughters after Shabbos, particularly one of our daughters in this area knows a great deal. She said, Abba's right, but it's not, I don't know why, it's not in the dictionary. I told my wife, you got to look into a concordance. But how do we know where to look? Aleph bet. Ah. Aleph bet already makes it a lot easier. And here we have one example, the Pachad Yitzchak. Reb Yitzchak Lomfarti, he was from Italy, influenced by the Enlightenment, by the Renaissance. And in his Sefer Pachad Yitzchak, you already have, according to the alphabet, endless sugyas from Shas. Sources analyzed. How do you find them according to the alphabet? And here I have a beautiful example, something that I consult all the time, although there may be already later sources. Why do I consult it all the time? When I was in graduate school, I had a professor, Yehoshua Finkel. He was a tremendous Semitic scholar, well known yet from the old world. You can look him up in the Judaica. And one time he came over to me and he said, Arnold, I want to give you a gift. I said, I don't need gifts. He said, no, this is a gift you'll enjoy. And he gave me his Yad Malachi, a copy out of the 19th century. And he wrote into it that he gave it to me and signed his name. And said, it's very important for me. My library grows. I have to get rid of all the Sfarim. And he says, I want you to use the sefer. Whenever you use it, think of me. I was very moved. And whenever I pick up the Yad Malachi, I always think of Professor Finkel. Now, who is Malachi? It's Harav Malachi HaKohen. The Yad Malachi, according to the alphabet, all the klolim of Psak Halacha, according to the alphabet. And it gives you klolei gemara, klolei aposkim, klolei hadinim. And I'll give you an example. I'm quoting now from the Yad Malachi, klal aleph, halacha ketalmid b'makom harav. Ain. You have to know to look it up under aleph. If you want to look it up, it is page 10. Subdivision Lamed Chet, Klalei HaAleph. Snu, Ein Halacha Ketalmid B'Makom HaRav. Now what's the problem here? And he raises the problem, gives all the sources. What? This defeats, contradicts everything we spoke about the last 2 weeks. Didn't we speak about tradition, innovation? Makom Hinichalo Avatav Lehit Kaderbo? What do you mean, ain't halachic a Talmud b'makom harav? If that's the case, I got to shut down this class. Rabbi Bednish has to shut down his class. Rabbi Meir has to shut down his class. I believe all three of us are quite innovative. Am I right or wrong? We have minds of our own. We each have an interesting derech. At times we probably contradict each other. But that's beautiful. That's what Torah Shabbat prayer is all about. So you're going to say a Talmud just has to surrender to his rav? So he goes into a whole explanation with sources. The only time Ein HaChalak, a Talmud, Makom HaRav, when it's your Rebbe Mufak. But if it's not your Rebbe Mufak, the Yimkein Lo Shafka Chayi L'chol Tzuva Mirabanan. He says, if you're not going to let a youngster, a Talmud, who comes up to the Chiddush, if you're not going to let him paskin differently, you are not allowing the young Talmidei Chachamim the breath of life. You are choking them. But nevertheless, and he brings all the sources. I'm not going to go further because it's not what I want to talk about. But you can see the sources there, the trivity brings, and there's a tremendous problem here. I take you back to my conversation with Reb Heschel Schechter, with Reb Tzvi Schechter. Right? Some of you learned by him. So I say to Reb Tzvi, I say to Heschel, how do you paskin a Yontif Sheni against your own Rebbe? And Reb Heschel says to me, nu, nu. All right. You would have a lot of trouble with this Yad Malachi. You understand? And I have to be honest with you. When I take three matzot Leil HaSeder, why ain't I taking two matzot? What am I pasking against my Rebbe? All right, first of all, that's not such a powerful example. Minhag Yisrael, it's not the end of the world. Three matzot, two matzot, all right. In Lamdas, it is a big difference, I agree. But Yontif Sheni's mamas a psak. All right, I struggle with it, and I've told you many times what I saw the Rav do with my own eyes, when I spoke with the Rav about with my own throat, what I heard the Rav say with my own ears, hineni ke eved bifnei rabbo, I shiver, I shake, this is my Rebbe. What I know he held, and he, all right, I can't change minhag of Klal Yisrael. I can't run away from the Ramah so easily. All right, I don't believe they're going to give me Malkut and Olam HaEmet because I take three matzot instead of two matzot, etc. Lamitet, he goes into another interesting question. What about if all the Talmidim gang up on the Rebbe? That it's Rabin Keneged Yachid. And to a certain degree, you might find this happening today. We have so many problems today with women's lib, with women, feminism, and you have so many Talmidim of the Rav who have gone so much further than their Rebbe in what they permit. I can tell you of many examples, but a simple example, the Rav felt that a woman could not be president or vice president. And the version I heard directly from Rabbi Holzer, who was sitting with the Rav when the Shaila came up about 40 plus years ago, was that the Rav felt president and vice president have to get up in shul and make announcements, and that's not a place for a woman, but it certainly is not a problem of Srara. The Rav of the presidency, Srara, if anyone knows what it means, the president of a shul, you better have your life insurance paid up, Chaim, before you become president. But secretary and treasurer, a woman can be. Today I know many Talmidim of the Rav already paskin, women can be presidents, women can be vice presidents. So it's Rabin Keneged the Rebbe, perhaps. According to the Yad Malachi, the Rabin doesn't count. All the Talmidim count as one against the Rav. Okay, be it as it may, I leave the issue hang fire, but the concept of the Yad Malachi, the Aleph Bet, the Pachad Yitzchak, I remember in my days we still consulted a Pachad Yitzchak. I remember in the library in Gottesman where the Pachad Yitzchak was. But now we come down as modern times develop. Shmuel, you are a young man. What is your name? What is your name? Slow down. Oren Hariri. I taught a lot of Hariris over the years, and I need not tell you, both here and in Mechola, Israelis and Anglos. Oren, you and Shmuel, Aaron Lekefer and Yitz Rubin, we have one problem. There is so much in Torah Shabbat Peh. How do we find it? How do we turn to it? How do we discover it? What, are you going to be a chutzpah and tell me you know everything? You know all the sources? How many of us can be like Rav Ovadia? And remember, there was no computer around. And slowly but surely, an idea developed of a source book. What is a source book? All the sources listed out. on every topic imaginable. You open up one of the volumes of this massive source book, and you have the sources before your eyes. Gentlemen, one of the greatest source books, putting endless shas and poskim together in 8 major volumes. You know who we owe it to? Reb Chaim Benvenisti of Smyrna, which I believe was part of Turkey at the time. We're talking about the 17th century. His years, 1603 to 1673, came up, listen to the name, Knesset HaGedolah. Name is very important, you'll see in a moment. Knesset HaGedolah, 8 massive volumes, at a time when publishing meant every word had to be set by hand. You're on your way to Novadik, good luck. Think what I'm telling you. Every oath had to be set by hand. And in the Knesset HaGedolah, you had everything. And the Chidah, the great Chidah, listen to this, in the Shem Gedolim, right? The Chidah's famous Sefer, his most famous Sefer. He wrote endless Sfarim, but this was a Sefer where he describes all that has been published and what it contains. And you look into the Chidah, again, I'm giving you an exact source, Ma'arechet Gedolim, Chet 17, in the original edition of the Chidah, Daf Chaf Dalet Amid Aleph. I repeat, Ma'arechet Gedolim, Chet 17, subdivision 17, Daf Chaf Dalet Amid Aleph. You know what the Chidah wrote? And listen to the plan words. Ubilvado. He's talking about the Knesset HaGedolah. Ubilvado. Lo yarim ish mora hara'a. Habakhi bedake hora'a. Vohu meyire hora'a. Et yado. Bishim hora'a. Had sheyelech mechira. Levet HaKnesset V'yireh Ma Bepiv Umar Yizamun Einei Chachmato V'achatzeto Mibet HaKnesset B'nachat Ruach Ya'areh Yoda Yoda. What a fabulous description. Just play on words. Beautiful. Mora Hara, you're a Rav. You're a Baki. You learned, you studied, you were Mishamesh Gedola Yisrael. You're a graduate of Gris Yerushalayim. You've had wonderful Rebbeim, myself excluded, but your other Rebbeim who taught you what to look for, how to paskin. But you're a good Jew, Vuhumi Yirei Hara. This is not giving an answer in mathematics. This is giving an answer in kosher treif. Muta Asa. These are questions where your Shemayim plays a role. Don't be Mora Hara until you go into the Beit Knesset. What does it mean, the Beit Knesset? What is it, a play on words? Knesset HaGedolah, the Sefer of Reb Chaim Benvenisti. And only when you come out benachat and you've thought it through, then Yoreh Yoreh. Who is the greatest collection of sources? Not ancient history. The Rav of Chevron, 1800s, died in 1904, rabbinated almost all over the Sephardic world, a giant of giants, Reb Chaim Chizkiyahu Medini. No, what are we talking about? The Stei Chemed. What a work did he do. 8 volumes, endless sources, endless ways to paskin, endless achronim, endless kitvei yad. Not only that, he quoted from the newspapers of his era. Already in the late 1800s, a lot of Divrei Torah was being written in periodicals and newspapers, conflicts, machloket, questions, crystallization. I can give you endless examples. We don't have to go any further than the whole question of civil marriage. A good deal of the literature on whether you need a get to end a civil marriage, Owen, is right in the newspapers, the periodicals, the Tel Tapiot, the Stei Chemed. What an attempt. But it's overwhelming, and as much as he attempted to organize it, we don't have it all. It's hard to find exactly what you want. Twice attempts have been made at indexing it, one by Chabad, one by a more general scholar. Both indices are available, but it still doesn't do justice to the Stei Chemed. And then, gentlemen, we come into modern times. Modern times, post-World War II. What Hitler did to us, totally eradicated the Jewish world as we knew it. Totally eradicated the living tradition. I need not go further than Professor Chaim Soloveitchik, Dr. Grach's seminal article on rupture and reconstruction. Today it's a world of reconstruction. Endless balei tshuva. We are totally cut off from a living tradition. You all know how many sfarim have been written on two little paragraphs in the Shulchan Aruch. Today you have sfarim hundreds of pages because no one has a living tradition. No one ever saw their fathers, their grandfathers, their great-grandfathers eat matzah, leil haseid. Do you follow me, Nechemya? This is Reb Chaim. Reb Chaim's article on rupture and reconstruction is just fantastic. He's like his father. Chaim is like his father. Anything my classmate touches, he's totally innovative. Exactly like his father. He inherited that from Moriah Rebbe. Gentlemen, we're totally cut off. We're beginning all over again. The Rebbe gave the Yedzeit Drasha in the mid-50s, a drasha that I cite in my work on my Rebbe, where he asked the question, people laugh at me. I'm so excited in Boston when I go into Maimonides on Friday and I visit the classes and I find children from Boston can read a Pasuk Chumash with Rashi, can read a Mishnah. And people say to me, Rav Soloveitchik, was is mit euch? What is with you? What are you getting excited about? You spoke and learning with Rav Chaim Moshe Grzynski, with Rav Baruch Ber Leibovich, with Rav Elchanan Wasserman, with the Kovner Rav, with Gedolei Gedolim. And you get excited because a little pinhead in Boston can read a Chumash with Rashi? And the Rav gave an unbelievable answer. I'm just giving you the gist. You can see it in context in the Rav, the world of Rabbi Joseph E. Soloveitchik. But the gist of the answer, we're building a new world. The previous world was destroyed. And he says, yes, today I rejoice that a kid in Boston from a home that was so distant from Yiddishkeit that the kid can read a Pasuk Chumash with Rashi, that can read a Mishnayot, that he's starting to learn elementary Gemara. It's a different world. All right, some of us become somewhat lamdanim. But where do we get all the sources? Where do we turn? While this was happening, there was another factor on the Torah scene, the Jewish scene, our world scene. The Sheret HaPleita. People survived Hitler. They poured into Israel. Among them were Rabbanim, Lamdanim, Mufhakim. Gentlemen, it is very hard for a rabbi to shift gears. Shmuel, don't correct me with the facts. If I want your opinion, I'll give it to you. Your father is a businessman. All right? He was a businessman in Poland. He was a businessman in France after the war. He got to Brooklyn, opened up a similar business in Borough Park. You understand? All right. He had to learn a new language. Poland, he spoke Yiddish and Polish and French. France, he spoke French and Yiddish. In Borough Park, he spoke Yiddish and Hungarian. Never spoke English in the store because he wanted to make sales. If you know Borough Park. That's easy for your father to do. Nehemiah's grandfather was a doctor. He was a doctor in Berlin. He survived the war in Belgium. He was a doctor in Belgium. He came to America, he qualified, he was a doctor on the West Side. But a rabbi is in an endless world of Torah learning. You're in a, what's the word? There's a new word my students once mentioned to me, a time warp. Am I using it right? You're in a time warp. Very hard for you to change, to shift, to adjust. I was fortunate. I came to Israel, I was a young kid, I was 31 years old. All right, I have an American mentality and an Israeli mentality. Occasionally the two merge into one, but it's not too often. But imagine a rabbi who survived gets here at the age of 50, 60. Eret Yiddish, he speaks Yiddish, his world is Yiddish, his whole knowledge is Yiddish. He can't shift gears at that age. It's not like he can open up a shop and he sold clothes. He had a clothing shop in Poland. He has a clothing shop in Yerushalayim. What do you do with these rabbanim? And Rav Herzog and Rav Issa Zalman Meltzer came up with a fabulous idea. They understood, and perhaps 200 years from now, you will hear a lecture, Michael, and you will jump for joy and say, my Rebbe said that 200 years ago. This is a new period we're in. Who gave the name Achronim? It happens gradually. No one voted. The Rishonim are over, the Achronim are beginning. This is a period of ignorance, of lack of learning. We have more kids sitting in yeshiva today than ever before. We have more amratzah today than ever before. And some of the Amharits are these very kids who claim they're sitting in a yeshiva. The Abur's, the Oraita. I've spoken with some of them. It's beyond words. If you walk by any yeshiva, you see kids smoking outside. That's a yeshiva boy or a rotzeach? He's killing himself. You know what good is Torah? You learn Torah. You learn the Ten Commandments. You heard Pashat Yitro. Lo Tirtzach. He's killing them. This guy's a lamdan? Come on. Don't tell me fairy tales. Gentlemen, we have entered a new period due to Hitler Yimach Shmo V'Zichro. Maybe it will be called Rishonim, Achronim, Misadrim, or Ma'apsim. We are collectors today. We are collecting knowledge. The chief rabbi of the state of Israel during this tumultuous period was Reb Yitzchak Isaac Halevi Herzog Zecher Tzadik Livracha. Matan, the greatest Rosh Yeshiva, I mentioned his name a half hour ago. Give me the name, everybody. Reb Issa Zalman Meltzer. And they got together and came up with an idea. Let the rabbis work on collecting all the responsa literature. And that's how Otzer HaPoskim was conceived and born. Money was raised all over the world. A shikun was built right off Geula. If you know Yerushalayim, it's right next to the central bus terminal. And it's shikun for Otzer HaPoskim, for Elder Rabbanim. They had housing, the offices were there, and they collected all the responsa literature. Many volumes have appeared. They began with the most pressing issues of all after the Holocaust. Can anyone tell me what's the most pressing issue we faced? Agunot. Ayin. Agunot. Began with Shulchan Aruch Eben Ezra and Siman Yud Zayin, the longest Siman in Shulchan Aruch. Hilchat Agunot. The greatest shem I was privileged to give in this Kol, 2.5 years on Agunot. They collected, it took from volume 3 to volume 8, just to collect all the responsive literature that existed up to that time. I think the cutoff date was 1950, all the responsive literature on Agunot. 3 to 8, 6 volumes. 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. 6 volumes. Unbelievable. Gave them employment and made all the material available. Every rav in the world, every Talmud Chacham in the world, how many women didn't know for sure that their husbands were dead? Talking tens and tens and tens of thousands. Men is less of a problem, but there were endless men who didn't know if their wives were dead. And this began Otzer HaPoskim. But there was much more. Rav Meir Berlin Bar Ilan, as we spoke about in the Monday class, the man who made Mizrahi a world movement, was the youngest son of the Netziv of Volozhin, and he was a synthesis of two worlds, the Litvische Torah world and the modern world of religious Zionism. He yet lived to see the establishment of the state. It was a year before his death, and he yet lived to make a Shechiyanu B'Shem V'Malchut, that momentous Friday afternoon when the state of Israel was declared. God should watch over us. L'kavod u'l'tiferet. Rav Meir Berlin saw what's happening in the generation. And he said, we are entering a new period. We can't compare ourselves to what was going on in Volozhin 100 years ago. We need all the sources. We need a new Beit Yosef. We need a new Sefer HaTorah. But now we have modern technique, scientific technique. And his thinking gave birth to perhaps the greatest gift to our generation than each and every one of us uses, the Encyclopedia Talmudica, the Talmudic Encyclopedia. And it is unbelievable. What do we have now? 29 volumes, I believe. It's unbelievable. You take any topic, alphabetized. They followed, I happen to know the inner workings of the encyclopedia because my revered neighbor for under 40 years was Rav Meir Berlin's right-hand man, Rav Yoshua Chutner Zeichet Tzadik Levracha. I lost a great deal when Mrs. Chutner died, Bat Sheva Soloveitchik Chutner, and Rav Yehoshua. Literally, I live on the fourth floor, and they lived one flight underneath us. And we were very close. I recall his memory in awe. And he explained to me, they looked at the Britannica, and they decided to use the same technique as the Britannica. Every article is introduced, and it gives you the subdivisions, just like a major entry in the Britannica. The footnotes are fabulous. And everything follows like a glove on a hand, alphabetized. Tell me, this is fabulous. This is wonderful. This is a new generation. And I need not tell you what came about with computerization. Who doesn't own the diskette from Bar Ilan being revised, I think, annually? People, I know the founders, I know the original computer workers. One of them grew up in the Bronx. Nebuchadnezzar was killed in a car crash in the early 80s. Reb Yitzchak Pechenik, I recall his memory, scion of a great Hasidic family. His father could have been a Hasidic Rebbe, but Rabbi Aaron Pechenik refused to renounce his being a Mizrachiite, and instead he had to run away to America, which saved his life. Had he inherited his father's Rebbeship, he would have been wiped out by Hitler. Reb Shalom Pechenik, his other son, lives in Bethel. Reb Yitzchak Nebuch was killed in a car crash. He's one of the first to program, to help work out the Bar Ilan. Oh my gosh. The Gruz Beis Medrash, right in the corner. You have access. Bar Ilan computer. Years ago, I was a partner with one of my grandsons. Bought the diskette. But all right, I bother students if I have a question. Check it out for me. Find the word who discusses it. Wow. Wonderful. Beautiful. But there happens to be a downside. And I'll tell you what the downside is. It's not the obvious one. The obvious downside is, yay, it's so easy, we get all this knowledge. 100 years ago, 200 years ago, when I learned in Valeshin, about 160 years ago, we had to work hard to get knowledge. But boy, we got it. And when you work hard, you are Konerit, Kinyan Torah, Perek Shishi, Pirkei Avot, Rice of Kinyan Torah. Okay, Memchet Terachim al Torah Niknait. And your gear is very important. But that's not the main criticism. It's the new generation. We have to live with reality. We forgot it all. We lost it all. Ruption, reconstruction. Thank God we're now in a period of Mesadrim. We're now in a period of Ma'asfim, perhaps it would be called. I'll let you know in 200 years. But there's a real downside. Until now, the only one who had knowledge in these spheres was a Talmud Chacham. Today, every Tom, Dick, and Harry, every Malshin, every Mumar, Lahachis, L'Teyavon, is a Lamdanit. Yossi Sayyid did a terrible thing a few weeks ago. Very simple. An issue broke out in Israel that has gone all over the world. It's a terrible issue. It's a terrible Chilul Hashem. They coined a new expression in Hebrew, a new word, Hadrat Nashim. It will now enter the dictionary. People who push women aside. Yeah. They're halachat here. I believe Aaron Rakefet lives according to halacha. But in my set of halachat, I never ever envisioned spitting at an 8-year-old girl and or calling a chayelet a prutza, Chilul Hashem of the highest order. So of course the country is shaking on this issue. It continues to shake, and this issue will not go away because it's at the very roots of what our society will be like here. And if you know what's going on now in the pre-election campaign, we're gearing into an election year. If you understood the weekend was said in public last week by the new party, Yair Lapid, and the weekend papers, you'll see that this issue will not go away. It's part and parcel of us, and of course, a dummy like Rakefet will express an opinion and fight to the end for his Torah viewpoint, Das Torah, with a smile. Gentlemen, Yossi Sayyid, Good luck, Michael. Pick up from where I'm leaving off, because it's very fascinating what I'm about to say. But no, go ahead, you have to have a deadline. Yossi Sayyid went, and who's Yossi Sayyid? Most of you don't even know. He's a has-been. He was a member of the Knesset, a member of Meretz, a member of a party that only believes in democracy and humanism. Torah values have no role in Israeli society today for them. He follows his mentor, Shulam Aruloni. And yes, he said it happens to be a very nice person on a personal level. I know people who are very fond of him. And he's a good person. But his concepts are a world apart from. He never had the privilege of learning with Mori Rebbe Rav Soloveitchik was speaking with Reb Moshe Feinstein. I would like to believe, had he stayed with the Rav and spoken with Reb Moshe, he would be a different person, but I may be naive. He went and published an article in Haaretz, which part of its very existence is its hatred and enmity for Torah and Zionism. It's owned by a very wealthy family of German origins, and Shokin has said more than once it's worth his losing X millions of dollars a year to have a mouthpiece against Torah and against Zionism. They believe in a democratic state where Jews and Arabs will be equal and there'll be nothing Jewish about the state. Published an article of all the Maimari Chazal that put down women. I don't even want to quote the trash that he cited. Appeared in Hebrew, appeared in English.
What was the word you just used? You don't want to quote all the what?
Trash, trash.
If he's trash, did he add his legitimate sources?
Absolutely, I'll explain myself. I'll explain myself in 1 second. What do I mean by trash? You jumped ahead. Very simple. He took it all out of context. When you take it out of context, it sounds terrible. You want to talk about Chazal's attitude towards women? Then you have to quote every quote in Chazal towards women. You cannot be selective, because Chazal represents human experience. And I can tell you, I think I've seen it all. No, you can't believe some of the problems that have come my way the last few weeks. People involved me in, or tried to involve me, or told me about. Some people love women, admire women, respect women, exalt women, listen to Eshet Chayil and take it seriously. And other people, enmity towards women, bigotry, put them down. Hey, that may be human nature. What about the male species? I want to take all the minor chazal about the male species. You're going to find positive, you're going to find negative, because this is human nature. I just told some people here from New York, big shot educators, that if you ask me, the first trait a Rebbe has to have is to love his students. If a Rebbe doesn't love his students, he has no right to teach Torah. Well, I have a different approach. I look at my students, you're the future, you're tomorrow. I not only love you, I loved when I high school kids, you can ask them out of the 60s. BMT goes without saying what my relationship was. That's a Rebbe. Can everyone love every student? My wife, you never had a bad student. I say they're no bad students, they're just bad Rebbeim. It's unfair. You have no right. People have different dispositions. So a guy got angry. He said something. I don't want to quote the negative grammars. I can quote plenty. But that's not the total picture. Human beings speaking. Human beings letting off steam. Human beings letting off steam. It's unbelievable how insightful Chazal was. But when you quote it out of context, it sounds terrible. And he went ahead and quoted it all out of context. And he didn't make the point I'm making, that these were people in a moment of anger. These are human relations. Why do we have divorce? Why do we have divorce courts? Why do you have batei dinim? Why is gerushin a mitzvah kiyumit? It's not a mitzvah kiyuvit, but it's a mitzvah kiyumit. What's going on here? This is all Chazal had to say? What a terrible article. And Haaretz publishes it with glee. And I thought to myself, this is a tremendous drawback of everything being available. A Talmud Chacham knows how to balance it. A Talmud Chacham knows how to open up a Rambam Hilchot Ishut and see what the Rambam has to say in Perek Tetvav about an attitude towards women and an attitude towards men. That's what we have to strive for. But you know very well, occasionally we get angry. Occasionally we say something hot-tempered. Why do we have Hatarat Nedarim, Erev Rosh Hashanah? A human is a human. You all know why the Muslim movement failed. Black Catfit is a dinosaur. I admit it. My grandson did on my talis. I want that identity because I once lost the talis in America. I put down my talis. I don't fold it Shabbos. And I left it there in the gab. I came and collected all the taliyot. So I think I found it. It's a whole shaila appeared this week in the weekend newspapers. What happens if you pick up a talit? You're not sure it's yours, but it's similar, etc., etc. So, and every talit I own, there's a little drawing on the side. And on one talit, he drew a little kid with payas looking at a dinosaur. He's the kid with payas, and I'm the dinosaur. Of course I'm a dinosaur. I learned Musa, I studied Musa, I took it seriously. But the Muslim movement couldn't win out. It failed. How many Muslim Nicks do you meet in your life? 100, 200? Chassidim? Hundreds of thousands. Because Chassidus, to be a simple Chassid is very easy. To be a great Chassid may be a little difficult. But you can be part of the crowd on a simple level as well. And you quote Shas, you pull out what you want, you don't give a balanced picture. Shulam Raloni used to do the same thing. And she was amazing how much she knew. And she knew because she had been a teacher of Tanakh, but she knew a lot more because she already had access to the computer, to the Talmudic encyclopedia, and every Amoritz or Sonny Yisrael suddenly can quote like a Christian trying to censor the Talmud. And this is, in my opinion, a downside to wall this great development. Yes,
Zach,
it's
over. The previous generation, the topic of what does Judaism think about Christians? And they quote the sources that a goy is not considered a human being.
Right.
So that's the same.
Right.
So we have a problem. But nonetheless, look how wonderful. You're right what you're saying.
No, you have to balance it. No.
But the other side is, we have all that knowledge.
So you remember, I recall in this very class that a fellow named Yitzchak Rubin said to a Rebbe named Aaron Rakefet, how do you accept the Tanya? Where he's, you know, the famous Tanya, the Jews and Goyim have different souls. And as I recall, Rakefet shot back before he gave you a serious answer. He shot back, after the Holocaust, do you have a question like that? Okay? So you see, you have to quote, but you have to quote in context. You have to make clear, not all Jews thought the same. People have different temperaments. People have anger. Look, you can quote me when I say, I worry about Germany. I think, what should we do? Should we drop atom bombs in Germany? Or do we take reparations and try to make friends? Do you know that they just had a ceremony up north in Svat with German grandchildren of Gestapo and SS coming to Svat, a ritual they took part in that enables them to lechadesh mechadash, to recharge their lives and to lose the illness of being grandchildren of murderers. No, it's a ritual. I don't know. I saw Mekubalim doing it with them. Maybe it makes sense, but we're human beings. It's a total picture. And to quote out of context is really sinful, because people reading Haaretz, and that goes all over the world, the English edition, people reading it think this is the total picture. That is the minority opinion. It's not the total picture. I don't have the date, but it has to be within the last 2 weeks. I'll tell you who sent it to me, Steve Gross. If you contact Steve, you know Steve Gross, so fine.
Yeah.
Okay, so you can get it. Yes, Nehemiah.
You think this changes how we look at the Talmud Chacham? Like you said that in the 50s that Aaron Lichtenstein would sit by the window and would quote like the Gemara. Well, now I have like my laptop, man. I could do like the same thing.
So you're asking a very good question. The Kambi is asking, so what do you need a Rabbi Lichtenstein for? But I'll tell you what the difference is. A computer can give you a lot of knowledge, agreed, but it can't put it into an Eitz Chaim. It can't give you a lifestyle. A Talmud Chacham has to put it all together and turn it into a Torah Chaim. And I think that's the difference. With all the computers in the world, when you see, I've seen Rav Ovadia in action, I can tell you, to watch the man in action you feel you're with a living Sefer Torah. You don't feel that with a computer. I can give you many examples. You want the simplest example of all, read in Washington about how I was Matir and Aguna with a certain insight that I developed right here in this classroom. And when I went to Rav Ovadia, there was such empathy and sharpness, and like in a minute, I remember he looked away, turns back to me, Atatzotek, Yeshkan Sveik Sveika, and I could see Torah Chaim before my eyes. Computer, you don't see that. So we still, look, I'm not an idiot. We're not going to get rid of a computer. You know what I'm saying? When I was in England, they taught me before you leave the house, you got to check the computer to see whether the tubes are running on that line, because they're always repairing. And I saw people in London, in my crowd, they don't budge out of the house without consulting the computer. So you're not going to get rid of a computer. But ultimately, water finds its own level. I'm a great believer that Torah will win out, and we still need Rebbeim, we still need Kedusha, and we still need Lamdanim, and we still need insight, and we still need people who live the past and the present while they're in our, the past and the future while they're in our present tense. Okay? So that's my answer. Okay. Gentlemen, so you see, we have major areas that one has to consult. Yes, Yitzhak, come on.
I get the name, I'll know tomorrow morning. In our synagogue, someone donated, it's 22 volumes. A rabbi in Switzerland.
And what's it about?
It's an encyclopedia. One man did go from Aleph to Tav, every topic you can think of in the Yahadut. And he just quotes and quotes.
One more second, when did it come out?
I'm not sure.
Who did it?
It's called Acharya.
And who's the author?
It's topics in Mura Machshava.
Who's the
every topic?
Who's the author?
I'll let you know.
Okay, fascinating. Fascinating.
It's unbelievable.
It's an unbelievable world. And something like that goes into the computer, goes into Hebrew books, and then you Google. It's mine. I can only tell you that I had a very difficult shaila. I don't want to mention from where or anything else. And I was able to solve a terrible problem through the computer. And la halachu lemaisa. And it was unbelievable. A shaila if someone is Jewish or not Jewish. A conversion was done almost 100 years ago, 90 years ago to be exact. How do you know who the Rav was? And no one is for sure. All we could establish was the location and who grandparents said it was this rabbi. And these people were, semi-from. The people asking were Balei Tshuva already. And it was a very difficult shaila because there was kahuna involved. And if you paskin, you do a gerut l'chumra, he loses his kahuna status. You understand? And I don't want to go into detail. Mitzvah the father was a kohen. And I want to tell you, you punch in the community and the name of the rabbi, and you get a computer printout of a master's thesis done about that very community, pre-World War II Hasidic Rebbeim in that community. And lo and behold, there's the name. Then I had Siyata Deshmaya that I uncovered two men in their 90s who grew up and lived in that kehila, and they now are retired, live in a warm climate. And I look at their phone numbers, which I got through miracles, because my daughter had a certain representative, someone in a divorce case, and he had contact with that community. And I notice it's very similar to the phone number of a student of mine. Call my student, who's a Talmud Chacham, and I say, do you know these men? What do you know? I know them. I daven with them every morning. They're the elder gentlemen and our daily minion in the young Israel. I say, could you ask him this question? Gets back to me the next day, and they both said the only gerut done in that community until the 1960s was by this Hasidic Rebbe. No, there's no conservative rabbi there. So I was able to tell this person, you're a Jew 100% and a Kohen. It's not like Rav Heschel Schechter said in the interview with Bamishpacha that every year in YU Kolalim they have many conversions, but those are all conversions l'chumrah. What do you do if you're dealing with a Kohen? You can't just go say, go and convert, and someone who was raised as a Kohen and called to the Torah as a Kohen and give brachot as a Kohen, suddenly he's not a Kohen. Understand? Someone married with children. So Baruch Hashem, we were able to solve the problem. We can't throw the computer away, but we have to be aware of the downside.
Is this a community
that starts with all? No. I can tell you privately, but I don't want to mention it publicly. Okay. My dear friends, we've spoken about different areas, where we have to look, how we paskin. We spoke about simple sources on the Gemara. We spoke about Psakim, books of Psak. We spoke about Shuvat. We spoke about Mesadrin or Miasfim. I now want to shift gears and come to a subdivision of this topic, but a subdivision that will carry us many, many more weeks than the original topic, and will come upon fascinating material, halacha lemaisa. And essentially, what I'm going to ultimately drive at or advance to, which is more important, a psak halacha or a tshuva that is written halacha lemaisa? You all know, what do I mean a psak halacha? And I'll go into great detail, but just, I could say hamazlek, just to introduce what I'm saying. You open up the Mishnah Berurah. All right, fine. It's a psak. Shulchan Aruch wrote a sefer of psakim. The Ramah added his tablecloth. The Mishnah Berurah wrote what I would say is the most famous, the most widely accepted commentary on the Shulchan Aruch. Whether we like the Aruch HaShulchan better, that's an endless debate, but halakha lemaisa, every kid growing up today, certainly the Ashkenazic world, is raised on the Mishnah Berurah. On the other hand, you may find the very topic that the Mishnah Berurah discusses that Rav Moshe Feinstein or Rav Avadji Yosef or Rav Menachem Kasha or Rav Tzvi Pesach Frank have this very question, halacha lemaisa, and have to deal with a real live situation. Who do you accept? Which is better? And imagine if Rav Moshe or Rav Avadji differ with the Shulchan Aruch, differ with the Mishnah Berurah, differ with the Biur Halacha, which is the Mishnah Berurah's super commentary. Which is more important? The theoretical psak or a tshuva written as a result of a question, halacha lemaisa? And this is the question I want to deal with. All right, let's set down some of the ground rules. What are we talking about? You have books written on psakim. You have various types. One type may very well be you find a psak. It's not a book written on psakim as much as an afterthought. What do I mean by that? You're all familiar with it. You're learning Rashi. Every once in a while, at the end of his commentary, Rashi will throw in halacha lemaisa. You're learning Tosfot. Every once in a while, Tosfot will throw in halacha lemaisa. Or you have, not leaving it to chance, not haphazardly, not just an afterthought, not just a postscript, but you have a code of Jewish law that is written down, halacha lemaisa, A, B, C, D. It tells a Jew what to do. And you can have two different approaches. One approach is on a very narrow topic. I'll give you an example, something that you may or may not be dealing with in the Kollel. Torah Tabayit, by the Rashba, by Reb Shlomo Aderet. Torah Tabayit is on what? On many of the laws of Yoredeya. It's not on Orach Chaim. It's not on Eben Ezra. It's not on Choshen Mishpat. Torah Tabayit resembles, to a certain degree, Yoredeya. And according to the Bayit Rishon, in the Torah Tabayit, Hashar HaRishon, and it's like a regular house. You know the way he builds it, like various sha'arim, or you would call it more correctly, rooms in the house. Different entrances in the house. And he begins, Shaninu beperek rishon deshchitat chulin, hakol shochtin, deshchitatan ksheira, chutz mecheresh shoteh v'katan shem yukakalu b'shchitatam. And he goes into a whole discussion. How can they shecht? When can they shecht? What does it mean someone is watching them shecht? What about an apikoros? What about a tzduki? What about someone who's koyfer in Torah Shebaal Peh? Can you depend upon him? And those, it's not questions he got. It's not something that's happening in front of his eyes. This is a code, but it's a limited code to Torah Tabayit, to certain parts of Yoredeya. Or you can have a major code where the author intended to encompass the entire world of Torah Shebaal Peh. And once again, our two greatest examples, Mishneh Torah and the Shulchan Aruch. The Mishneh Torah had a dream, you're all familiar with it, that you finish Torah Shebichtav, you open up the Mishneh Torah, and you never have to learn anything else outside of the Mishneh Torah. He collected in an organized fashion the entire Torah Shebaal Peh. Nothing is lacking. Halacha, that's no heg bizman hazez, we said, and Hilchata, the Mashichata. And the Mishneh Torah was overwhelming. It's just amazing what one individual did without a computer, how he had to have Kol HaTorah Kula, all of Shas, on his fingertips. Bavli, Yerushalmi, how he put it all together. It's overwhelming. But you see, it's a big difference. Torah Tabayit with the Rashba is limited in scope. You have Rabbeinu Sajigo and Sefer Mekach Umemka, limited in scope. Here, you take the Shulchan Aruch, all right, he left that Hilchata the Meshichata, but as far as Halacha Hanoheget Bizman Hazeh, he tried to put everything in. Okay? But there's a big difference. A Shelet and Shiva, a question that's live, that's real, it's concrete. It's happening before your eyes. A code of law is theoretical. It's very, very different. It's not happening before your eyes. It's a source book. It's a legal code. It's there when you need it. You open it up and you'll try to find what you are looking for. Shmuel Shabbat Hilchata would be a practical example, exactly like the Torah Tabayit, except it's on Hilchat Shabbat, and it's organized scientifically. We owe to Shmuel Shabbat Hilchata, owes his method to Rav Shlomo Yosef Zevin. Rav Zevin changed the way you write Torah Bisman Hazeh. I should say to you that Rav Shlomo Yosef Zevin was the editor of the Encyclopedia Talmudica. Rav Berlin was looking, Rav Bar Ilan was looking for a Jew who knew Kol HaTorah Kula. And Rav Shlomo Yosef Zevin was something unbelievable. I yet had the schut to know Rav Zevin. He knew Kol HaTorah Kula at his fingertips, all of Bavli, all of Yerushalmi, and had a tremendous command of modern Hebrew. And because of this fabulous command, he could write beautifully, and he knew general knowledge, he knew scientific knowledge, he was a Renaissance man, he knew how to use a Britannica. You all know that Rav Zevin wrote a whole essay on Shylock by Shakespeare, what the halacha is. He wrote a whole essay on Kerach, on ice, halachic ramifications of snow. The man was a genius. He knew Kol HaTorah Kula. What a Jew. He was a Chabadnik from the old country and a Mizrahiite. What a Jew. And he was a blessed choice. And because of the way he put out the encyclopedia, because of the way he put it out, he changed all of Torah writing until today. All the volumes we have, halacha lemaisa, with foot sources, with organization, with indices, we owe to Rav Zevin. And that's what makes the Shmirat Shabbat Kehilchata so important. I would say, Kibru Aleim Kol Yisrael, today when we have a Shaila in Shabbat, the first thing Rakefet does is go to the index of Shin Shin Bet, or Shin Shin Chaf, and I go to the index. It is fabulous, and you owe it to Rav Shlomo Yosef Zevin. Okay, now, so that's, of course, a very basic difference. There's another difference, and I want to zero in on this difference, and this difference, again, is fascinating. When you have a book of Psakim, you don't have to give reasons. It's like a code book. 1, 2, 3. You can give footnotes if you wish, but the code book reads very coldly. It's not emotional. There's no fresh air in it. There's no tension of life. If to use a word that comes up in the tribute to Rabban Soloveitchik, if you've seen it, it's very kedai to see. It appears on the in the OU website, or there's a link from Emet V'Amuna. So Rabbi Morty Willick says, he was talking with Rabban, he was a kid of 16, and Rabban used words he didn't understand in English. And one of the words Rabban used were the vicissitudes. And you don't feel the vicissitudes of life. I mean, you know what that word means? Vicissitudes. The difficulties, the challenges, the tensions, okay? The maelstrom. You don't feel it. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Now, you can give reasons, or you don't give reasons. The Mishneh Torah didn't give reasons at all. Labriya. Could be the Shulchan Aruch felt he didn't have to give reasons because he gave them in the Beit Yosef. Okay? Could be. You look at the Ramah doesn't give reasons either, but in parentheses, either he gives the sources or someone added the sources afterwards. I believe the Ramah, it's questionable. I think the Ramah himself gave those sources, but it's very brief. It's A, B, C, D. Fact to the point. No ice, no dressing on the ice cream. No butter on the bread. When you come to Tshuvat, all the shakler and tarier, all the give and take, all the thought process, is there in front of your eyes. It's fascinating. The tshuva begins with a concrete question and a minute later you're in the Mishnah, you're in the Gemara, you're in Rashi, you're in Tosfot, you're in the Rambam, the Ruf, the Rush. Before you know it, you're dealing with the Shulchan Aruch, you're dealing with the Nosai Kalim, you're dealing with the Achronim, you're dealing with the Chatam Sofer, you're dealing with all the Achronim, the Nodab Yehuda, in the Sephardic world. Rabbi goes on and on and on with citations, with precedents, with case studies, until he reaches a conclusion, until Rabbi Moshe reaches a conclusion. How much Rabbi Moshe wrote, let's say, on the Mechitza issue in the United States. And there's a very fascinating example, because you do not find the word about a Mechitza in the Dalet Chalkei Shulchan Aruch. Doesn't exist. Not one word. Not one word about Mechitza in the Shul. And you all know that that was a crucial issue in America, perhaps the defining issue of the 20th century that Torah had to deal with in the United States. I've said many times that had the Rav not stood up and made the case for a mechitza, it would have vanished. You have shtiblach, perhaps, with a mechitza. In a modern Orthodox shul, you wouldn't find a mechitza. You have no idea what went on in the 1950s. Every prominent shul in Brooklyn did not have a mechitza. One rabbi had a bit of a mechitza, and he went on a trip to Europe and Israel by boat. When he came back, the mechitza was gone. He had a heart, you should know, he had a heart attack. Finally, the Balabatim did him a whole fed. They put a rope in. A rope. And he, it was a miracle that they put the rope in. The other Orthodox shuls in Brooklyn didn't have ropes. Today, you will not find an Orthodox shul without a mechitza. It can be various sizes, various heights. I don't have to tell you. The Jewish Center still has a mechitza out of the 1910s. How they get away with it, I have no idea. The 1920s, you walk into the Jewish Center, which is one of the most prominent Orthodox shuls. If anyone wouldn't tell you that's a mechitza, you would not recognize it as a mechitza.
How high is it?
It must be 50 inches. I don't know.
I spoke to a rabbi who was in Lancaster, Pennsylvania, who called the Rav. And the Rav gave him a head of 36
inches. 36. That's in Lancaster, Pennsylvania. We're talking about the Upper West Side of New York in the year 2013. Baruch HaTodim Melech Olam Shechom Yerov. Gentlemen, what a difference between a tshuva or a sefer of psakim. And I have to tell you, wait till what I show you next week, how this reflects in how we paskin, how we deal with shelet and shuvat, how we deal with humility, and how Gedolei Yisrael related to innovation. Och, does this reflect on what I have to say at the start of next week? It will take another 100 years to even scratch the surface, but we'll scratch the surface next week and move on. So, gentlemen, if I can reiterate, Danny, even the Malshin Malam Danam, all right, maybe keep that title, I don't know, right? You might say the, if you want to subtitle it, subtitle it. Gentlemen, what did we do today on Sunday afternoon when the rain may have finally stopped? We dealt with a new era, an era that we are living since World War II came to an end. We are the generation of the donkeys, paraphrasing the Gemara in Shabbos. And we can't even call ourselves Achronim, but we'll call ourselves Ma'asvim, Misadrim, but at least we're trying to inculcate Yirat Shemayim, which Nehemiah, a computer, cannot give. You follow me? That's the basic difference. Having a computer does not a London make. It's a London is part of a thought process, a life process. You have to hear the Torah from the Rav on this. You'll understand what I'm saying. Okay. So we spoke about examples, and we spoke about the greatness of the Otsar Poskim, the Encyclopedia Talmudica, and we came right down to the computers, and the downside and the upside. And again, what Jesse Sarid did is unforgivable, Because the same computer that gave me information where certain my mommy Chazal had unhappy marriages and might have said a nasty thing about their wives, their endless my mommy Chazal with the greatest appreciation and love and respect for women, and vice versa. Women had plenty to say about men throughout the ages, good and not so good. And you can find sources on everything. And then I shifted gears, and I want to come into the whole question of psak versus a tshuva. And I want to develop what is so unique about a tshuva. What makes it so important? And how do we relate to it when there's a contradiction between an achron with what the psak may have been, or the way we understood it, until this achron came along and paskind what seems to us to be a little bit different. Okay, tomorrow Be'ezrat Hashem, we pick up exactly where we left off last week, and I have to tell you my initial words about Das Torah have engendered so many comments. I will relate to a few. It'll be very fascinating. And then we go further, because I haven't even scratched the surface with Das Torah. I haven't even explained it. I just gave you a little bit historic background. Please pass this down to Rabbi Rubin. And if anyone wants the Xerox from Igeret Leben Torah, you are welcome to it. And here's the Reb Chaim Isaac Grzynski, if anyone wants. And here is a collection of Rabbi Ovadia Yosef and his approach to the earlier generation. Until we meet again in health and happiness, Das V'Danya. Thank you very much.